Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Healthy Baby Boomers Network Blog Talk Radio Show. I'm your host, Dr. Erica Goodstone, licensed mental health counselor, spiritual relationship healer, and somatic body psychotherapist, helping men and women heal their bodies and their relationships through love. Author of the book Love Me, Touch Me, Heal Me, and the romantic novel Love in the Blizzard of Life, and creator of Healing Through Love Seminars, Love Touch Heal Relationship System, and the 30-Day Love Challenge. This show is all about living your dreams, fulfilling your life purpose, and creating and sustaining love and health and total well-being for the rest of your life, no matter what age you are right now. In every episode, I speak with vibrant, exciting, and positive men and women who are proving that life can and often does get better and better as we reach our 30s, 40s, 50s, 60s, and beyond. Today, I'm speaking with Dr. Kristen Costa, licensed clinical social worker, known as Dr. Chris, an award-winning behavioral sciences professor, clinician, and author from Boston, Massachusetts. As the lead faculty for behavioral sciences at Northeastern University, Dr. Chris researches well-being and resilience and operates a practice devoted to preventing and treating burnout. Her book, Reset, Make the Most of Your Stress, was the Next Generation Indie Book Awards Motivational Book of 2015. A regular contributor to the Huffington Post and Psychology Today, her work has been featured on NPR and CBS Radio. Dr. Chris's unique ability to connect and engage with different types of audiences has led her to be invited to speak nationally and internationally as she struggles herself with overcoming perfectionism, anxiety, parenting, depression, and illness. So all of us have to deal with these issues. And as Dr. Chris and I were just briefly talking about, the way society is right now, the work she's doing is even more important. So with that, I'd like to welcome you, Dr. Chris.
Thank you so much, Dr. Goodstone. It's so great to be here and, you know, just to have this opportunity to have a conversation about what we can do in the face of all of the many stressors we find ourselves in.
Yes, and it's at every age. It's not just for people who are getting older. We're all facing life stresses. So I'd like to start with just finding out a little bit about your background and training that led you to focus on this topic of relieving stress.
Sure. So I'm a clinical social worker by training and also a behavioral therapist. And now in my higher ed role, I both teach and also engage in qualitative research. And as you suggested in the intro, you know, my main focus is looking at what contributes to our resilience and what gets in the way. And so I've spent many years in outpatient mental health, learning a tremendous amount from folks who bravely have come to me in therapy to discover their strengths, to understand their challenges better, and how they can navigate them. And then more recently in my career, I really have had a belief that education and learning can transform us and be an amazing tool for personal healing, for transformation. And to that end, you know, many clinicians know that the work is so much about understanding one another and teaching. And I have the privilege now of teaching an amazing group of students here at the university who, like all of us, wrestle with a lot of dark emotions in the middle of very high demands in our society.
And it really affects young people, maybe even more than older people, because they're first developing and trying to discover what to do with their life.
Well, I think as you suggest, you know, when we sometimes people think about development as limited to, you know, even younger children, but what we really know is that across the lifespan, we're always developing, and there's all kinds of change and challenge at every corner, at every developmental phase. There's things that maybe become more natural for us or perhaps easier for us to cope with. And then we find ourselves having to make all kinds of adjustment. You know, we deal with losses of all kinds of shapes and sorts, and we deal with, you know, just that constant process of trying to grow and be our best and navigate what's at hand. And so when we look at the research just around stress and resilience, we see really two sides to it, that people can demonstrate incredible resilience at all stages of life, and there's no sort of set prescribed way to think about our chronological age. However, we know that at different stages, stress presses upon us in different ways. And during those stages, really, we have access to different types of resources that can help us. And so, you know, I'd love today just to talk a little bit in terms of, again, all those stages of life we find ourselves in, or the people we love, they're in a certain stage. And, you know, what is it that we might be able to grab onto and to draw upon in moments that are anxiety-provoking or that we're finding challenging?
All right, I would love to hear some of that. But before we continue, maybe it would be good for you to explain what you mean by resilience.
Absolutely. So resilience is something that's getting a lot of attention for good reason, and it's because it's a really powerful way for us to understand ourselves. By definition, resilience is a capacity to endure hardship and then to be able to recover or rebound or bounce back from that. So it's that mindset and skill and attribute of being able to, again, go through really difficult circumstances. It could even be trauma or loss. It could be oppression. It could be something even simple, but being able to go through a process of recovery and healing and moving to a point where then you're propelled forward. And again, it's gotten a lot of attention because we know that our circumstances in life are never sanitized, they're never cookie cutter, they're always really nuanced and chaotic. And we need to know how we can cultivate this ability to bounce back during difficult moments, because those difficult moments, unfortunately, are inevitable. And Dr. Goodstone, one of my favorite,
go ahead.
One of my favorite images, a beautiful image of resilience is a palm tree. You know, think of a storm and you see a palm tree really bend over. It feels like it's going to snap in half, but then it somehow comes back and it restores. And I think it's a beautiful example in nature. We know that those trees actually strengthen their root systems, you know, during those storms. And in a similar way, we're learning that people are also very capable of that restoration, which is very encouraging.
Wow, that's a beautiful image, because it brought back a memory that I have right after we had a few hurricanes, really bad hurricanes in Florida. And noticed the trees, the palm trees looking so sad. They were drooped. And that was going on for weeks. And then they rose up again. And, you know, at this point, you would never know anything had happened.
That's
so
right.
So they are resilient. And another thing that recently I spoke to someone, in view of all these tragic things happening around the country and the world, that many of the people from Sandy Hook, Connecticut, that went through a horrendous trauma have been really resilient. And they come back and doing something for society as a result of that what happened.
That's right. Oftentimes people find great purpose even in the middle of something as horrific as Sandy Hook, and, you know, certainly the level of tragedy we're seeing. It does, you know, and that's part of making the most of our stress and being able to look at the greater purpose and meaning that we have and how we can turn something around in a positive way. And I think that's just a message right now, given the context in which we're all finding ourselves, that's very encouraging and helpful, because I think our tendency is to want to take action and to do something to mitigate not only the stress, but just to change the paradigm and change these, you know, horrific episodes of violence and hatred that we're seeing, you know, that we can, you know, show a different way of being that's much more positive and productive and loving. I love how you use that word, than what we're seeing.
Yes. So maybe get back to what you were going to talk about, the ages, you know, how stress affects people of different ages, or however you worded it.
Absolutely. Well, one of the universal things across the lifespan is that everybody is, you know, finding themselves in a pressure cooker situation. So the context of today, if we look at not only the violence that's happening and what we've discussed so far, but that the market is so competitive, that it's hyper-competitive, the economy is, you know, really challenging. And so it's creating unprecedented opportunities and challenges for folks. And one way that I like to think about it is we're having to jump through hoops more than ever before. And I think we see it from a young age that kids are ramped up. There's an awful lot of early conversation about career and college and, you know, having to do all and be all. And I was speaking with some colleagues last night, kind of chuckling about, you know, you have to have, like, started your own nonprofit and, you know, done every activity in high school to feel like you're even going to get into college these days. So I think, in general, families are finding themselves under a tremendous amount of pressure to take advantage of these amazing opportunities without finding themselves to a point where, you know, they're running around and just feeling, you know, that it's never going to be good enough. So that's one piece overall that I think all generations are experiencing in one version or another. And then certainly when students get into college and we get into the level of competition that we're seeing and all that is demanded of students, that can be a particularly challenging time managing it all. And we know, again, with our economy, a lot of students are juggling full-time jobs and part-time jobs, and it's an awful lot to manage. So that population in particular is also one that we're seeing more than ever. You know, it's been described as a college mental health crisis. Over 62% of our college students of today are reporting high levels of anxiety. And this is an area that not only I became curious about, but very concerned about, because these are obviously my students here at the university. So I've been really exploring what is contributing to their angst and what is also helping them get through it.
Well, we also have a high level of addictions, chemical addictions.
That's right. That's pervasive. And a lot of people, speaking of lifespan and sort of thinking about different ages and stages, a lot of people are surprised to know that folks over 60 are at a tremendous risk for substance use. And we look at the data on that, and we know that you know, there's extreme loneliness, there's coping and grappling with loss and the many adjustments associated with that stage of life, and that more than ever, seniors are addicted to painkillers and prescription medication and alcohol, and we see those rates rising at an exorbitant level as well. So really, you know, from beginning to end, we really have to, you know, take our collective will and be thoughtful about keeping mental health at the forefront, keeping it as a priority, because it's really inescapable at all the stages. And then the other big thing is that women in the age above 40 range are the highest new cohort that are being prescribed medication, and, you know, anti-anxiety and antidepressants. So that's another huge piece as well.
They're at a stage very often where they have all the pressure. They have children, they have, many of them have careers, and they also have parents that may be needing some kind of assistance. So they're becoming torn with so many responsibilities.
Indeed. And, you know, it's been classically called the sandwich generation. It's a really fitting term. I think it resonates for a lot of folks who find themselves in that squeeze, and they feel like there's very little margins in their lives to actually decompress or to take a moment for themselves, because there's just demands on both sides of things. And like you said, most people's work environments are like that as well. People are often doing the jobs of multiple people, and it just seems to never end. And then, of course, you add technology into the mix and taking our laptops and our phones home. So it just seems like it's become more and more difficult.
More and more divorces, and many of those may come about just because of all that stress.
That's right. If we're not healthy individuals, it's hard to have a healthy relationship.
Right. It looks like the partner is causing the problem, and a lot of times it really isn't. It's the whole, all the circumstances.
That's right. And I think what you said is really important for everybody listening, is looking at that big picture, you know, looking at context and understand, you know, a lot of times with anything psychology and anything stress-related, the first instinct can be to go inside our own heads and sort of say, this is a failing on our part, or this is something I haven't problem-solved enough. But we really have to look outside the bounds of ourselves and look at the greater context and how that's bearing down upon us.
Wow. And there's a lot. So how can we make the most of our stress? I mean, what can we do about it?
One of the things, just at a very basic level, is understanding the true definition of stress and understanding its different sides and different dimensions. And I speak about this in all my work and in my writing, of course, looking at the fact that stress can be defined according to eustress, which sometimes is informally known as good stress. So that's the kind of stress that we might experience when we've set a goal and we're excited about it. It might be eustress associated with a wedding or a big event or getting up and giving a talk, or athletes and performers often experience a lot of eustress. So it's that good adrenaline that we need that keeps us on our toes, that keeps us motivated, that keeps us on point. And that is very powerful, and that's something that can be harnessed. On the other hand, of course, there's the distress aspect, and that's the part that's disruptive and can be potentially harmful for us when we're oversaturated with it. And that's the part that really kind of sucks our lifeblood out and makes us feel maybe overwhelmed, or just gets in the way of us seeing the big picture that we've been talking about. And so folks need to know that there are the two sides of it, just on that basic level, but also that if we're finding ourselves really overwhelmed by stress, we can also listen to the message that's giving us, you know, that maybe that's a cue from our bodies and brains that we're doing too much, or that we're not setting up enough aside to engage in what I call conscious self-care. So, you know, the things we can do to actually put gas back in our tanks and, you know, to unwind and to feel human and feel grounded again, rather than just feeling like we have to perform all the time or we have to be perfect. It's very easy to lose sight of purpose in those moments. So stress can also be a teacher for us. We can learn a lot from it. It can cue us in on important things that we need to pay attention to. And one of the most important things in all of my message is that prevention is less costly than repair. And how many times do we let it get to that point, to that boiling point, when we're really overwhelmed before we then take action? So much of my work is people understanding you don't have to run away from stress. It's not bad. It's not a moral failing on your part. But what is it that you might put into place that could help prevent it from getting to the point where then you feel burnt out, or you're in a place, you know, where you're not so healthy anymore?
So how does somebody recognize when they're under stress before it gets to that really heavy level?
Well, what's so interesting is the American Psychological Association says that a lot of times people don't realize it until they're actually physically sick. So maybe they're losing hair, or you know, they've lost weight or gained weight, or they find themselves in the ER thinking that it was a heart attack when it was really anxiety. So we definitely have to try to listen to maybe the less extreme cues our bodies are giving us. So it might not be that we start having heart palpitations, but it might be that we notice we're not really breathing much during the day, or that we feel kind of revved up. So listening to our body is really important.
Sorry to interrupt, but what comes to mind for me, because I've done so much work with mind-body therapy, is to go get a massage or go get a session of body-oriented psychotherapy, which is just gentle body work to help you to get in touch with feelings and emotions. If your shoulders are tight and your back is tight, you go get a session. That helps you to realize just how tight or not or stressed you really are. Touch is powerful.
It really is. It's such. I love that. That's just such a cornerstone of your work. And I think we don't realize that because, again, we're just kind of drinking the Kool-Aid of today that tells us we always have to be on and go, go, go. But when we actually stop and attend to our bodies, and certainly, you know, there's so much science that's now, you know, coming out to really affirm that what we know already in our spirit and our gut instincts, that this is beneficial. And, you know, I've gone through many seasons of life where I've experienced burnout personally, and I can tell you that acupuncture and massage and something known as craniosacral treatment, I talk about all of these things in my book.
It's great.
It's so powerful. There's so much healing that comes with it. And I think for people who, in general, push hard, we need a place to kind of come out of our headspace. You know, it's so easy to stay in that headspace and, you know, just always be cranking, but to come into our bodies and to allow our bodies to be healed and to restore is very powerful. And it's a way we can really sustain ourselves through the long haul.
I also think it would be wonderful if people reached out to some kind of mental health counseling, you know, even way before there's really a big problem. Just when you have a small issue, you speak to someone who can help you sort through it, maybe one or two sessions, and you could go back, you know, resilient.
It's so true, and I think a lot of people still have kind of like, you know, TV perceptions of it, of what therapy is like, or they picture it's like Freud and the couch, and they don't understand that we've come so far in our ability to have all kinds of different approaches in therapy, many of which are very strategic. They're very goal-focused. They work very well for folks that might feel a little bit reserved or uncomfortable with kind of those myths about therapy or their ideas about it. And that's the key thing. You know, people, men in particular, wait until, you know, they're really at a point of overload to access help. We know that suicide rates, for example, amongst men are really high because of that, what I call the fateful wait. And what we have to realize is it doesn't signify a sign of weakness when we access treatment. It's really a sign of strength to say, no, I really want to feel and be my best, and I'm going to make use of these amazing resources we all have at our hands now that will help me navigate and that will, you know, think about therapy. You have, you know, from all the work and all the people you've served for so long, you have an objective, neutral person in your life who's confidential, who's trained, who's caring, who has probably seen and heard it all. So there's no judgment. And how beautiful is it to have a judgment-free space in our lives where we can sort of really get to the bottom of what's going on and, you know, how we want to set goals that really honor our values and honor our health.
Wow, it's really also about you discovering for yourself what you really want or what's really going on. It's just this other person is like a mirror for you and helps you to see what – it's not somebody telling you and directing you, but it's just helping you to see what's going on so you walk away clear and you can go back to your partner and say what needs to be said. It's just a strengthening tool to have.
Absolutely.
So tell us about your reset model. What led to its creation and what is that exactly?
Absolutely. So reset was really born out of my therapy room and the way we've been chatting about what therapy is and how it can be useful. It really is not only a process of mirroring and helping people see their promise and their potential and their strengths and the opportunities to maybe communicate differently or change behavior. It's also a time to learn skills. And so RESET is an acronym and a model that I developed when I was working with just amazing people coming in, you know, professionals, all walks of life, people who were finding themselves really at that point of overload. And so RESET integrates cognitive behavioral therapy. It integrates neuroscience, just basic health practices, but it's a framework that we can all use to institute self-care practices in our daily lives. So each of the letters, R stands for realize, E energize, S soothe, the second E is end unproductive thinking, and the final T is talk it out. And so what it does is it encourages everyone to know, you know, we're not cookie cutter, we're not one size fits all prescribed, you know, like a 5-step formula. I think that stuff really doesn't serve us well. This gives everyone an opportunity to think mindfully and consciously about what types of behaviors and activities make sense in the context of their lives, you know, what types of things they can put into play each day, strategies, things like just as simple as sleep and how much water we're drinking, to also mindsets, you know, how we're looking at ourselves, how we're labeling ourselves, or how we're looking at a situation, and how we might be able to reframe that in ways that actually help us. And I think a lot of us get stuck. You know, we ruminate, we have sometimes a lot of anxiety, but reset really helps us think about how do we reframe those things that are before us, and how do we leverage stress, leverage our strengths, and, you know, use that in a thoughtful way to avoid the oversaturation that can come with all the stress we find ourselves in.
All right, so I would like you to kind of go through each of them, like realize what? What would help somebody to realize?
Absolutely. So realize is, you know, realize where you're at. So realize where you're at is about perspective taking or appraisal. So the first step is do not decontextualize yourself, which is a fancy way of saying look around you, look at the world, look at maybe your family life or your home, your work life, and look at your environment and how that's affecting you. And then also look at what types of things might be adding fuel to your fire. So let's say, for instance, you have really had a negative interaction with somebody, or you hadn't had the best night's sleep, or maybe you're sick and you're just really worn out. It's a tough season at work. And realizing what's happening in those raw emotional moments is vital, because it allows us to not necessarily lock down on certain conclusions or have faulty beliefs about ourselves or one another. It helps us buy a little bit of time to regroup and know that our emotions might be doing too much of the talking, and instead we need to be able to get to a place of secondary appraisal or a second take, where then we're able to sort of know what our resources are. Maybe it might be something inside of us, like creativity or humor or problem solving, or outside of us, like therapy and coaching or a caring colleague or someone in our family that maybe has gone through something similar. So realizing is knowing when we're really overwhelmed, that might not be the best time for an in-depth analysis of our lives, but a time where we can say we're going to revisit this and come to a better conclusion.
Oh, great. And then what is energizing? How do you energize?
Well, energizing, yes. Yeah, so energizing is about that hands-on healing you talked about, but it's also about, you know, how are we taking care of our bodies, right? Are we moving them? Are we putting things into them that are helpful? Are we getting the rest we need? So, again, this is sort of like picturing our computers. You know, we get that little flashing light that tells us it needs to be recharged. I think we need one of those as well. But it's about attending to our bodies and attending to, you know, really our mind, body, and spirit, but just doing things that actually physically help recalibrate us.
Okay, and then what is soothing? How do you soothe?
Soothing is about mindfulness. So it's about using the power and leveraging our senses, you know, really thinking about how we're taking in the world and sensory experiences. And I think a lot of us kind of gulp down our food and we might not look at the sunset or just be present in our day-to-day lives. And, you know, we have so much stimulation. We have so many things coming at us constantly. And our bodies get overstimulated. And we're going to choose ways to soothe. They're either going to be adaptive or maladaptive. So when we look at, like we talked about, the addiction rates, not only to alcohol and drugs, but also to food and other means in which we're trying to soothe, it might be shopping, it might be material things. There are a lot of things that we look towards to soothe, but that don't end up sustaining us in the long term, and they actually get in the way often. So we need to use our senses to soothe ourselves, to give our brains and body and spirits a different message. You know, we think we're stressed out all the time just because sometimes we're going at such a high pace. We might not even be that stressed out. So soothing is about reminding ourselves that we're okay. It could be as simple as just putting on a really comfortable robe that we like and just being present and just letting ourselves feel that. It could be taking our time to sip our tea or look at the sunset. But we all have things that soothe us, and we have to choose the ones that are most adaptive to give us the best health possible.
Yeah, that's beautiful. I happen to have several Kindle books, and one of them is Let All Your Senses Speak As You Heal, you know,
nice.
All about the senses. And
wonderful.
Wow, that's powerful. So the next one is ending unproductive thinking.
Yes, we get caught in the mire for sure. And unproductive thinking really can rent so much space in our heads and really get in the way of productive thinking, which is time that we can devote towards growing ourselves, to learning, to maybe serving others. You know, our thinking really, really affects our behaviors and our feelings. And so we have to be careful to set limits internally around the things, you know, that we're rehearsing in our minds or thinking about. Sometimes we fight with other people in our heads, or we just spend an awful lot of time enthralled in mental gymnastics that sometimes aren't so useful. And many times for those of us who deal with perfectionism or anxiety, that internal dialogue is not only powerful but very destructive. So we have to find things that we can engage in mentally and cognitively that are more powerful and more conducive to our health versus just ruminating and going through things like a broken record, so to speak, that end up really being a tremendous drain, not only on our time, but also our energy.
And the final piece that as part of your reset model is talking it out. I find that invaluable.
Likewise, I think we've just seen so much evidence of that, right, and all the work and the opportunities to serve people over time. And it's not just about the verbal processing, which can be obviously critically important. It's also about building community. And we, you know, we've touched upon the various stages of life and the perils and the challenges that are inherent in those. But really, we can't do any of this alone. We can't engage in self-care, conscious self-care. We can't engage in, you know, getting well just all by ourselves in our own minds. We really need to reach out. And I think something that's so powerful that's happening is people are getting more courageous and more bold in terms of sharing what their own levels of angst are and being open and being honest about the vulnerabilities we all feel as human beings in this world. But being able to say, you know, I can reach out, we can join forces together, we can talk about this. And I think there's nothing worse than when we're in isolation. And my study that I recently did with my students revealed that the students who define themselves as resilient said that coming out of hiding was a critical point in their healing process. So, you know, we can sort of be embarrassed or reserved about sharing things. And I'm not saying we have to all sit around and share our deep, dark secrets, so to speak, but we have to be real and authentic with one another and say, gee, on one hand, as human beings, we can be powerful and beautiful, and we can do all this great stuff. And on the other hand, we're scared and we're lonely and we're full of anxiety, too. And I think when we engage in community and we avoid isolation, it gives us a lot more strength, a lot more collective strength. And look, with everything that's happening, if we don't link arms and we don't sort of critically think about all of this, we're really going to be in trouble, you know. And the World Health Organization says there's no health without mental health, and I really believe that. I think if we're not well, if we're not grounded emotionally, spiritually, you know, mentally, then we're really, you know, not doing anybody a service.
Absolutely. So this has been delightful. Our time is coming to an end. So how can our listeners get in touch with you?
They can go right to – yeah, I would love to connect with anyone. And my website is resetyourstress.com, and they can find all the information. I write a lot of articles there. I have a Put Your Mask On First guide, and you know, the book Reset, Make the Most of Your Stress is available online at Amazon and various other places. And then on social media, you can go to @TheRealDrChris, K-R-I-S. So again, that's Reset Your Stress, and that's the best place to go to get all the information.
Okay, thank you so much, Dr. Chris. It was delightful speaking
with you. My pleasure. Likewise. Take great care. Thank you.
And thank you. I am your host, Dr. Erica Goodstone, saying goodbye for now. Please visit my website, healthybabyboomersnetwork.com, to get your free report, How to Live to 100 and Beyond, and Be Happy and Healthy. And if you're ready to create lasting love, click the link to the 30-Day Love Challenge at my website, drericagoodstone.com. It's also a perfect holiday gift. Download a free report about love or hire me to speak at your next event through that website, drericagoodstone.com. I look forward to speaking with all of you again very soon.